Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:09 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 1st, and we had a couple of interesting moves in here today, but I thought we'd kick off and look at the euro, because it is right back down on its lows. And one of the things that I had been highlighting was the fact that it had encountered resistance at 116, 115, and 114. So the natural area where we could have anticipated it to encounter resistance again would have been about 113, but then it actually rallied to break the sequence of lower rally highs over the balance of this year so far before giving it all up and coming right back down to test the lows. So that is a clear example of a failed upside break coming back down to test the lower side of the range. So we're now back at 112. And questions are being asked about just how much or how long is it going to take the ECB to re-engage with quantitative easing. Mario Draghi has been one of the people that has been most aggressive in terms of printing money internationally, and well, he's not going to be in the job for very much longer, and he's going to want to hand off the economy in reasonably good stead. Therefore, I think there is a likelihood that the ECB is definitely not going to raise interest rates, and even potentially is going to re-engage with quantitative easing again before they have to hand over, so that the new person can then say they've inherited the policy rather than having to initiate it themselves. That would be very much in tune with the kind of one hand helps the other that goes on within Europe. That does raise the question about the outlook for the stock market, because every time the euro goes down, it tends to boost the market. And the Euro Stoxx index was up in a pretty impressive manner in here today. But more importantly than that, it is firming from the region of the trend mean. And this is still looking to be a reasonably well-supported rebound. When we start to think about Europe, there are obviously some companies that are doing very well, both from the fact that the euro is weak and that global demand is starting to pick back up again, and most particularly in China. So LVMH is pushing on to new all-time highs in here. Kering is really in a very similar sector and is also doing really quite well. But when we look at, for example, Wolters Kluwer in the Netherlands, well, that remains one of the more consistent trends, although somewhat overextended in the short term within the region. Then, obviously, when people are starting to think about the potential for a reflation trade in Europe, they're not going to start looking at these export champions. They're going to start looking at domestic plays. But finding domestic plays in Europe is rather difficult because there is such a large export sector. But then the primary areas where people would start to look at are the financials, primarily the banks. And the banks are heavily impacted by the negative deposit rate environment. So that we can then start to think about, well, what happened when you had quantitative easing in the USA? The banks did okay, but the asset managers did a lot better. And that's potentially what we're going to see in Europe as well. Since DWS has been spun off from Deutsche Bank, it has been rallying in a pretty impressive manner, and it is now approximating the region of the IPO price back in April. And this continues to look like a recovery scenario. When we look at, for example, Amundi, then they have a number of different kinds of products, but it's interesting that it was trending downwards all the way from the beginning of 2018, and it's now right in the region of its trend mean. So we're definitely getting some difference in terms of the performance of some of the asset managers. Then when we look at the insurance sector, well, insurance companies benefit both from the rise in government bond prices and the stock market, and the Eurostoxx insurance index also tends to be rather insular in terms of its international exposure. So it is a domestic play, but also within the financial sector that's outside of the influence of the banking sector. And it does now look like it is consolidating enough to break the sequence of low rally highs since the peak last year. Well, I think those are some of the more domestic plays that we have in Europe. Then, of course, we continue to see that the... I really don't think that it is an exaggeration to say that the political establishment in the UK is tearing itself apart. There is a clear potential here that that a very substantial number of people are going to feel utterly betrayed by whatever is eventually agreed. There is a strong likelihood that if we don't get membership in all but name, that the UK is simply going to remain a member of the EU. Well, every time that prospect gets closer to reality, the pound rallies, and this continues to look like a first step above the base against the euro. And when we look at the pound versus the dollar, then it is stabilizing here around this 130 area. What's also, I think, worth highlighting is that gilt futures have been rather steady, and they are now right back around this 130 area. I think anyone can see that there is a short-term overbought condition in here, so there is clear potential for some pause and consolidation. But then we have to ask the simple question, and it is the Bank of England going to be able to raise interest rates? I rather think that they would like to raise interest rates, but they're not going to be able to, for the simple reason that no one else in the entire world is raising interest rates right now. That there's a clear potential that we're going to get easier monetary policy right across the board, and the kind of strength that the pound would start to garner if they raised interest rates would be rather deleterious to the economy. So it's rather difficult for the Bank of England to raise rates. And if that's the case, well, there's the clear potential that we're going to see a contraction in yields. And the yield has broken, it's broken down towards this 1% level. Well, 1% is a big psychological area, and we may get some steadying around here, and that would unwind the overbought condition. But there's a clear potential that it could break downwards. So that's also very much in line with the kind of commonality we're seeing just about everywhere. When you look at, for example, the 10-year Treasury yield, well, it is overbought in the short term. So we could quite easily see a reversion back towards the mean. But the much bigger question then is whether it is going to have the wherewithal to be able to sustain a move back above the trend mean. When, for example, we look at what's going on in... just need to type these things correctly. The Australian 10-year yield was also breaking downwards last week, but it does look like we're going to see some pause of consolidation in terms of the rally in the bond price. Well, anything that is looking like a... One of the reasons why we had this very clear run into bonds was because people were worried about the economy. Well, China, factory orders are starting to improve. The stock market broke up and out of the one-month range in here today in rather emphatic fashion. That reasserts the recovery trajectory. The H-share index was also positive and continues to consolidate here above that psychological 11,000 level, which is plumb with the 200-day moving average right now. So that's very much within the context of an almost decade-long range, and we're about mid-range with an upward bias right now. Well, with China starting to perform once more, and not least, excuse me, not least because they have now abandoned their campaign of trying to contract the shadow banking sector, then that is allowing credit to move back into the economy, and that's part of the reason why we're seeing factories doing better. It's also very much behind the performance of the stock market, and the renminbi has been really quite steady, so that's also positive. So there is a clear reflation trade going on right now in terms of China. Well, some of the closed-end funds that follow China are also starting to perform here, and the China Fund in particular has got a long history of returning capital to subscribers. Now, they have been cutting their dividends over the course of the last few years, but if China starts to appreciate once more, well, then they have tended to pay out the discount to NAV in terms in the form of dividends. So I think that is something to bear in mind. Then when we look at what's going on Wall Street, well, the S&P 500 today pushed on to new recovery highs. This has been a very orderly consolidation, mostly above the 2800 point level, and it is now looking like we are going to get a run back up towards the peak from last year. This has been a more than year-long range below 3000, and that's an awfully big psychological level. And we also have evidence of the index pausing around 2000, and then we had a very significant pause around 1500. If we just look at the longer term history, 1500 was a very big psychological level all the way through from 2000. Well, since then, the market has gone up 88%. So that's a very substantial gain since the breakout that we had in 2013. This is a larger pullback than we have seen in quite some time. So it is, I think, really normal that we should see a lengthier period of consolidation. When we look at the log scale chart and then look at least a decade of history, well, we can see, for example, that the size of the pullback in late 2018 was pretty close to the size of the pullback we saw back in 2011. If the market can sustain a move above 3,000, then that is going to take a lot of the cash that's currently on the sidelines and put it back into the stock market. There is a wall of cash now that has been raised as a result of all the selling pressure that took place in the last quarter of last year. Well, then there is also the potential that we are in the process of moving into the last portion of the third psychological perception stage of a bull market, which is occasionally at least characterized by a mania. Well, where could the mania potentially arise? Well, we would have to think that the relative strength of the Nasdaq, where it was able to push to a new high in March, then it came back and posted a higher reaction low, then went on to another new high, and subsequently has rebounded impressively and is within striking distance again of its highs. Well, that's clearly where there are some candidates for continued outperformance. I continue to think that Amazon is the most important share in the world right now. It has done spectacularly well since the lows back in 2008, going from the low, I think it is worth highlighting, was back at $43, and it's currently sitting at $1,814. So that has been the share that has done best from this from the factors that have helped to drive this bull market over the course of the last decade. It's also leveraged to the health of the global consumer, but also the US consumer. So as long as those consumers are continuing to buy, then that's likely to be a bonus for Amazon. And I think the most important thing it's done has been to consolidate between $1,600 and $1,700 for most of the beginning of this year and then break out. It could quite easily have broken on the downside, and that would have been a failure in terms of the rebound that began on Boxing Day. So the action that we're seeing right now is really quite positive. The fact that the NYSE FANG index, which also includes the Chinese big technology companies listed in the USA, that it is now breaking away from the region of the trend mean and has rebounded pretty impressively, is all to the good. Well, obviously then people are going to start thinking, well, what about all the commentary we had last week about the inverted yield curve? Well, the first thing is that there is a difference between an inversion on the 2 to 10 year and an inversion on the 3 month and 10 year. The 3 month to 10 year inversion has generally got a much longer lead time to the next recession than the 2 year to the 10 year. And what that suggests is that the 2 year and 10 year spread has not yet inverted. And that usually gives us anything from 6 to 18 months of a lead indicator. Well, what that also then suggests is that we're at least a year away from the next recession. Well, that brings us to potentially the latter half of 2020. And then we know that there's a presidential election around the same time. So there is, I think, a clear indication that the market is beginning to price in the potential that we're going to get a progressive candidate winning that election. And if we know one thing from the last few years, is that the market rewards right-wing, or I think perhaps there's another way of saying there is certainly a tendency by markets to support people who are in favor of property rights and fiscal spending versus those that are of the tax and spend variety. Well, when we look at India, Brazil, and the USA, those markets have done really rather well. The only thing that has been supporting Mexico has been the fact that the central bank has been raising interest rates, and that has stabilized the currency. So, that is the Argentinian index. And when we look at the Mexican index, then it has broken downwards following the election. And now this looks like a first step below the top, and it's going to have to at least sustain a move above the 45,000 area in order to demonstrate a return to demand dominance. The fact that the Mexican peso has been so firm is as a result of the fact that the Mexican Central Bank has been raising interest rates, but that's unlikely to persist against a background where just about all other central banks are cutting rates, and that leaves significant potential for the peso to underperform. If we were to get a tax and spend type of administration hitting the US economy, then that would represent a very significant headwind for stock markets. So when we start to think about what to expect from the latter half of next year, then that has to be one of the potential outcomes. I saw a graph in here today looking at the production of copper in Chile, which is obviously one of the biggest producers, and it's been falling. Well, that is supportive of higher commodity prices generally, but particularly copper. The fact that China is back on a recovery trajectory is also supportive of the commodities complex. The LME Metals Index is firming from the region of the trend mean, and that continues to look like a recovery trajectory. Over the weekend, Rio Tinto announced that they are going to be producing at the lower side of guidance because of a cyclone in Pilbara, which dumped a lot of water. But the challenges that Vale are encountering as a result of tighter regulation, and not least from the dams containing their tailings, is continuing to weigh on their production capacity, and therefore is benefiting the iron ore market. So Rio Tinto is now at a new recovery high. This is the highest it's been since at least 2011, and it is looking like it is ready to run back up towards the peak we saw back in 2008. And I think there aren't many people who really thought that was a possibility in the throes of the credit crisis back in late 2008. Well, it's almost to be expected that the resources sector should start to do better in the latter stages of a cyclical bull market, and we are potentially now beginning to see that eventuality. The FTSE 350 mining index cruised through the 20,000 level in here today, and that is a clear potential that this lengthy consolidation over the last year is being resolved on the upside. When we look at that index on a lengthier time scale, then it has got quite some ways yet to go back up to the peak set in 2008 and 2011. Then when we look at the oil price, well, Saudi Aramco came out today and they told everyone what their profitability is on oil, and they're the most valuable, or they're making more profits than any other company in the world. And that's despite the fact that they're paying substantial sums out in royalties and taxes to the Saudi government. It also highlights that they make less per barrel than some of the larger oil companies. And that's a testament to the fact that private enterprise generally does tend to be more efficient because government-backed organizations do tend to experience what might, I think, kindly be referred to as leakage. Well, Brent crude is up $1.56 in here today, and it does look like now that it is going to push up and out of this range and put in another step higher. The market has been trending higher in a pretty consistent manner over the course of the last 3 months, and it would need to sustain a reaction of more than $7 in order to question that we're not going to see a sustained move back up towards the upper side of this range. I do think it's going to be difficult to sustain a move above $80 for the simple reason that there is going to be a lot of additional supply comes to market. Right now, the rig count in the USA has been trending down, albeit from record high levels over the course of this year. They are still pumping a great deal. But if that rig count continues to trend lower, then that is supportive of the oil price. It's when it starts to pick back up again that will be an indication that people will have started hedging. And of course, if you've got an oil production facility and you can hedge your production out, well, right now there is a significant backwardation. So there is no incentive to hedge. You can get more money today than you can for money out or for oil produced out to 2021. Well, what that suggests is that there is a near-term deficit. Eventually, this will move back into a contango as more production comes to market, the higher prices go. That's when producers start to hedge. That's then when they have the capital and the see-through in terms of their profitability to really increase the production. That's also when prices start to come back down. So we're that the very fact that we have this backwardation in the curve suggests that there is scope here for additional upside in the oil price. Well, when we look at some of the energy producers, then the S&P 500 energy sector is right in the region of the trend mean, but it really hasn't been knocking the lights out in terms of performance. When we look at the FTSE 350 oil and gas producers index, well, that is heavily weighted by Royal Dutch Shell, and it is back above the trend mean. When we think about Royal Dutch Shell, I think most people are concerned with their dividends. And the company has got a clear ambition to become a global power producer. They want to not only have oil and gas, but also energy production facilities. And that is something that will help to support the dividend. Well, then when we think about the utilities sector, having done so very well over the course of the last few months and at new recovery highs, it is now susceptible to some consolidation. Well, if the utilities are starting to consolidate, then that is likely to be of benefit to interest rate sensitive sectors, and most particularly small caps, and the Russell 2000 is right in the region of the trend mean and steadying from there. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is clearing the 1400 point level. And that's really very impressive, considering the extent of the loss of uptrend consistency the index had experienced. This is a very impressive rebound, and it is also telling us that it is a sector that is very heavily influenced by fears of trade wars, and the perceptions are that the trade war rhetoric is going to moderate. There is even the chance that we're going to have a deal, which is obviously really quite positive for the semiconductor index. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.